The hour of 1 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call the April 6, 2022 meeting of the House Taxes Committee to order under rules 10.01. And to the public, we would like all the information we have as members and staff, please go to the website, Minnesota House of Representatives, then go to committees and divisions, and then go to Taxes Committee, and then to the lower right, and you will find that information. With that, Ms. Griska, would you please take the roll?
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt is present.
Representative Marquardt present. Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard is present.
Lislegard present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Davids present. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Representative Agbaje present. Representative Carlson.
Carlson present.
Representative Carlson present. Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative Detmer present. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo present.
Representative Garofalo present. Representative Gomez.
Gomez present.
Representative Gomez present. Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Herr present. Representative Hertas.
Hertas present.
Representative Hertas present. Representative Howard.
Howard present.
Representative Howard present. Representative McDonald.
McDonald present.
Representative McDonald present. Representative Miller excused. Representative Moran.
Present.
Representative Moran present. Representative Mortensen.
Present.
Representative Mortensen present. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Robbins present. Representative Sandell.
Sandell present.
Representative Sandell present. Representative Schultz.
Schultz present.
Representative Schultz present. Representative Stevenson.
Stevenson present.
Representative Stevenson present. Representative Swazinski.
Swazinski present.
Representative Swazinski present. Representative Joaquin.
Joaquin present.
Representative Joaquin present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. With that, Representative McDonald, would you like to approve of the April 5th, 2022 minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, so moved.
Representative McDonald moves the approval of the April 5th, 2022 minutes of the House Taxes Committee. Any questions, comments? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. If you would temporarily unmute yourselves, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The April 5th minutes are approved. So members, today we're going to hear testimony on House File 3669, and there will be a DE1 amendment coming later tomorrow. But what I would like to do is give each testifier, we have like 20 testifiers, so about 2 to 3 minutes would be good if we could limit ourselves to that. And towards the end of the meeting, after the testifiers, I'll talk more about the process for tomorrow. So with that, we have first up Commissioner Doty. Department of Revenue. Commissioner, welcome. And before you begin, Commissioner, I would like to thank you and the Department of Revenue for your great cooperation, all of your help in providing information, especially the revenue estimates that I know we're looking to get as we put the omnibus bill together. And for your testimony along the way. So thank you so much for what your department and you do for our state and residents. So with that, Commissioner Doty.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. I really appreciate those comments. Thank you. But I want to say good afternoon again, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 3669 as amended. For the record, my name is Robert Doty, and I'm the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. When Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan proposed their budget in February and revised supplemental budget in March, they prioritized expanding economic opportunities for all Minnesotans, supporting children and families, and protecting Minnesotans' health, safety, and well-being. The governor also recommended investing in local jobs and projects through a proposed $2.7 billion in bonding projects. These shared priorities include supporting community prosperity with tax relief for middle-class Minnesota families and farmers, while also investing in public safety, health care, and education. In addition, like the governor's bill, this bill provides the resources needed to make significant investments to help Minnesota families thrive. The Department of Revenue appreciates the work of this committee has done to assemble this bill, specifically on the area of federal conformity. We all agree on the importance of responding to the federal tax changes enacted since our tax statutes were last updated in 2019. Individual taxpayers, CPAs, and businesses have all expressed the need to update our tax code to reduce complexity and compliance costs. This bill adopts the governor's approach to update the general conformity date and provide important conformity for individuals and businesses. We appreciate this important provision. We look forward to continuing to work with members of the committee and stakeholders on the best approach to administer this update that could impact multiple years of returns and adjustments for taxpayers. I appreciate the provisions from the governor's tax bill that are carried in House File 3669. I will highlight a few of the provisions of the bill that represent shared priorities. The governor's bill and this bill include targeted tax relief that will make a difference to families and businesses in their everyday lives. The bill recognizes the challenges Minnesota parents face in paying for quality, affordable childcare. Eligibility for Minnesota's refundable child and dependent care credit is expanded, which will lower taxes for more Minnesotans. Additionally, the bill expands eligibility for the refundable K-12 education credit and updates the measure of income to simplify the calculation of the credit. These changes will help parents pay for the education expenses of their K-12 children. We appreciate the adoption of the expansion of the working family credit to taxpayers that use an individual taxpayer identification number to file their taxes instead of a Social Security number. This program is an important source of financial stability for low and moderate income working families with children. Lastly, I would be remiss if I did not thank the chair for including, my notes are all screwed up here. Sorry about that. The bill includes a temporary version of the governor's proposal to streamline the sales and use tax exemption for building, construction, and reconstruction materials, supplies, and equipment for buildings and facilities used primarily by local government and nonprofits. This change will allow more projects to take advantage of the current sales tax exemption. I would like to commend the chair for including expansion to the homestead property tax refund. The governor proposed expanding the homestead credit to taxpayers with I-10s, and we appreciate the inclusion in this bill. These refunds target low-income households and those on fixed incomes and are an important program for helping to reduce the cost of housing and shore up taxpayers' ability to meet basic needs. This bill takes a new approach to the renter's credit by converting it to an income tax credit instead of the current standalone program. We will continue to work with the authors to make sure this credit can be administered. Additionally, we want to thank the chair for including several smaller provisions from the governor's tax bill. This includes increasing the income limit for the senior citizen property tax deferral program and adding hemp to the definition of an agricultural product for property tax purposes. While they are smaller provisions, they will still help many taxpayers, and we appreciate the chair including these provisions. Lastly, I would be remiss if I did not thank the chair for including many of the provisions in the department's policy and technical bill. Many of these are small changes, but will provide important updates to Minnesota's tax code. The department would like to reaffirm our commitment to making sure policies included in the final tax bill can be administered well for the taxpayers you intend to benefit for these policy choices. We will continue to share policy and administrative concerns as we continue to review the bill. I want to thank Chair Marquardt and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify. Thank you for your partnership thus far, and we look forward to a productive dialogue as we move towards the end of session and look forward to working with the tax committees to ensure a fair and equitable tax bill for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Doty. Again, thank you for your work this year to the committee. Next, we have Commissioner Marion Green, and then Commissioner Trista Matta-Castile is on deck. So, Commissioner Green, welcome to the committee, and introduce yourself, and good to see a former colleague here today. Commissioner
Green. Thank you so much. Thank you for the warm welcome, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Marion Green, and I'm the Hennepin County Commissioner for District 3 and Chair of the Hennepin County Board. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on the House Omnibus Tax Bill. And thank you, Chair Marquardt, Chair Joachim, and members of the Tax Committee for all your work on this bill. Chair Marquardt, it's a pleasure to see you again. Thank you for including the sales tax exemption for construction materials for local governments, school districts, and nonprofits. When the state collects sales taxes on construction materials on local public works projects, it drives up costs and ultimately drives up property taxes. We support streamlining the sales tax exemption and applaud your work to fix budget shifts like this one with the state's significant surplus. This exemption will help every Minnesota community deliver important public works projects by making local dollars go further, especially at a time of increasing construction costs. We hope you'll make the change permanent, as is in the governor's tax bill, so every community has equal opportunity to access the exemption. I also want to thank you for your efforts to make the property tax system less regressive. Affordable housing is a top priority for Hennepin County. We strongly support the provisions in this bill that will increase state resources to support safe and stable housing for all individuals and families. Since 2012, the median valued home in Hennepin County has grown 52% from $215,000 to $326,300. And over the past 5 years in Hennepin County, we've seen market values increase significantly faster for homes valued below $350,000 and apartments compared to higher valued homes and commercial industrial property. As market values have grown faster, so have the share of their share of the property tax levy. We support the provisions in the bill that expand access to the state's property tax refund programs, especially the transformational change to the renter's credit, as well as the adjustment to the homestead market value exclusion. Targeting property tax refunds based on ability to pay makes our property tax system less regressive and makes housing more affordable. And thank you for ensuring all property taxpayers have equal access to homestead benefits by allowing individual taxpayer identification numbers, ITINs, for homestead classification. This is simply an issue of fairness. I want to also thank you for your targeted investments in affordable housing and emergency rental assistance. Affordable housing also requires greater investment in our housing stock. Over 25% of Hennepin County households are cost burdened, paying more than 30% of their income towards housing. Hennepin County is investing $46 million of our American Rescue Plan funds towards the supply side of equitable housing recovery, including investments in deeply affordable housing. Historically, our multifamily rental RFPs are oversubscribed 4-1. Even with an unprecedented increase from federal ARP funds, our most recent RFP was only able to support about half of the 29 applications, leaving hundreds of potential units in the queue. We strongly support the new state aid to counties and cities to fund qualifying affordable housing projects. We also support the rental aid funding in the bill to counties based on each county's share of households paying more than 30% of their income towards rent. We have the infrastructure to efficiently manage more funding and continue to see significant need for renters. I also want to...
Commissioner Green, could you finish up? You're right on the timeline here.
Oh, good. I've got like two more points to make.
So. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your forbearance. I also want to applaud your commitment to continued business recovery. You've trusted counties to administer COVID business recovery funding during the worst part of the pandemic. We all did our best under difficult circumstances. We faced a lot of criticism, but mostly it's because need outpaced the resources. And I want to specifically thank the authors, Representative Agbaje and Howard, for working to ensure that this increased funding is fairly and equitably distributed. And specifically, thank you, Representative Agbaje, for your call highlighting the adjustments to the bill. Last message is to thank you for the county program aid funding. Counties are responsible in Minnesota for the delivery of essential services to every Minnesotan, including health and human services, public safety, criminal justice, transportation, and many other services mandated by the state. But the state does underfund or provides no funding for many of these services. So thank you for recognizing this need by increasing county aid, program aid. With that, I will conclude. Mr. Chair and members, thank you again for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Commissioner Green. Next up is Commissioner Mattis Castillo and then Jeff Corey. Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thanks so much for your time today to offer support of your omnibus tax bill. I am Trista Mattis Castillo. I'm the chair of the Ramsey County Board of Commissioners. And here in Ramsey County, we're really proud to be Minnesota's capital county, but it comes with some pretty significant costs. We are the smallest county in size with the second highest population in the state, and we host many of the state's government offices and facilities, as well as numerous universities, hospitals, houses of worship, and the cathedral, all off the tax roll, which is a huge impact on our property taxpayers. There are numerous provisions in this bill before you that will benefit taxpayers in Ramsey County and all across Minnesota. In particular, I want to express my appreciation for the proposed increases in county program aid, local affordable housing aid, and the various tax credits that benefit renters, seniors, and other homeowners who need the assistance your bill provides. The Ramsey County Board is grateful for your efforts to include provisions that will make our property tax system more fair for all taxpayers and less regressive. This is something that we have supported and advocated for years, and we view this as an important step. At Ramsey County, we approach all of our programs through the lens of maintaining affordability for our residents. We support the provisions in the bill that update and expand access to the state's property tax refund programs and the adjustments to the homestead market value exclusion. We support your efforts to target seniors in need and other homeowners with property tax refunds based on ability to pay. This will help to make our property tax system less regressive, which will have a huge positive impact for property owners struggling with big value increases in Ramsey County communities, most racially diverse communities like Dayton's Bluff and Frogtown. You've included a change to allow property owners to qualify for homestead classification by providing an individual taxpayer identification number. We see this as an equity issue. All property taxpayers deserve an equal access to the benefit afforded with homestead status, that your bill does that. In the same spirit, I want to thank you for your targeted investments in affordable housing and emergency rental assistance. We support rental aid funding in the bill to counties based on each county's share of households paying more than 30% of their income toward rent. We do have the staff infrastructure to efficiently manage such a program, and we continue to see significant need. I also want to thank you for including the appropriation of $10 million in FY22 and in subsequent years to the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Program from the Mortgage Registry and Deed Tax Revenue. I'll wrap up because Commissioner Green covered many of my talking points already, and I wanted to say ditto to Commissioner Green and Hennepin County, but to express our support for including the sales tax exemption for construction materials. I know you've heard about this from other local governments and school districts, but this is going to have a huge impact on us and our ability to continue to provide services. Ramsey County put $37 million of our American Rescue Plan funds into deeply affordable housing, and the city of St. Paul matched that, and so that money will go much further with that change. I do hope that you're able to consider making these changes permanent, like in the governor's tax bill, and just want to say thank you again for your time and your continued partnership to work to meet the needs of our most vulnerable residents. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Next up is Jeff Corey and then Gary Carlson. Mr. Corey,
welcome good afternoon.
To the committee. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and committee members. My name is Jeff Corey, and I'm the executive director at One Roof Community Housing. One Roof provides a broad range of housing services and programs in Duluth and surrounding communities in northeastern Minnesota. Our work benefits people throughout the continuum of housing needs, from homeless people to people that are precariously housed to working families that, with a bit of guidance and education, can buy homes of their own if they can find any that are affordable. There are two items in the taxes omnibus bill today that I want to address for support. The first is the $10 million annual appropriation for mortgage registry and deed tax growth to the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Program. Many of my colleagues and I in the Homeownership Minnesota Coalition have been supporting this dedicated funding for quite some time. In fact, this morning when I was preparing my remarks, I recalled that the first time I testified for the bill was on a trip through the Twin Cities to drop my son off at a soccer camp. At the time, he was a sophomore in high school. I'm happy to report to you today that he just graduated from college in December. We've succeeded on a few occasions with our efforts to get funding into the program, but it's been for one-time funding. And while we're grateful for that, the main impetus for the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Fund was to be able to solidify funding for this work at a level that allows those of us developing affordable homeownership to increase our scale of production to meet the very real needs in our communities. The increase in scale requires an increase in reliable, dedicated funding around which we can plan, secure land, and leverage other resources. And using state revenue growth from the sale of properties in escalating markets to benefit lower income homebuyers is an even better idea today than it was 6 years ago when I took my son to soccer camp. It's important that I mention as well that our Homeownership Minnesota Coalition serves BIPOC households at a rate that is 7 times higher than the market. So helping us increase our rate of homeownership development is a direct way to reverse the embarrassing homeownership rate for BIPOC people in our state, which is among the worst in our country. For the benefit of lower income families who could purchase homes of their own if they existed, and especially for people of color who have historically been closed out of opportunities to purchase homes of their own, I urge you to include this funding of $10 million per year in the Workforce Homeownership Program, Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Program in the taxes bill this year. I want to specifically thank Representatives Schultz and Gomez for their continued support of this program over the years. The second item I'm supporting today is the inclusion of community land trust properties in the 4D property tax classification, which will allow for a 25% reduction in taxes for owners of community land trust homes. Here in Duluth and surrounding communities, we have about 325 community land trust homeowners who would benefit significantly from this bill. Rising property taxes are undermining the affordability of these homes, especially in higher value areas. There are CLT homeowners all over the Twin Cities and Greater Minnesota who will benefit from including CLT properties in 4D.
Mr. Corey, that's if you could finish, please.
I've got two sentences, sir. Allowing this cost-neutral change to the 4D program will provide direct affordability assistance to those homeowners and help us continue to maintain the affordability of those homes when they sell. I want to thank Representative Richardson for her leadership on the initiative and Representative Joachim for including the provision in her property tax division report. Thank you kindly.
Thank you very much, Mr. Corey. Next up is Gary Carlson, then Patricia Nauman. Mr. Carlson, please.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Gary Carlson, and I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities, representing 837 member cities across the state. We have submitted a letter outlining many, many issues that we have support for in the bill, and I just want to take some time to accentuate three items quickly. Number one, the construction sales tax exemption issue authored by Representative Swedzinski and also included in the governor's bill is a very important change in state policy. It will make the current exemption process, which is cumbersome, much more streamlined and allow cities and counties and townships and schools to take advantage of that. Like other testifiers, we would like to see that made permanent. If you could delete that sunset date on page 61, line 31, we would certainly appreciate it. Secondly, the local government aid changes that are contained in Article 5 represent months and months of work by the four major city organizations from across the state, with the support of your nonpartisan staff in House Research, Senate Council and Research, and even the Department of Revenue had a staff member helping us with that effort. We reviewed many, many formula factors. We arrived at an improvement over the 2013 formula the last time it was updated. We really urge you to support that and keep that in the bill. The appropriation increase will help implement that and bring us back up to a funding level beyond the 2003 high water mark, Mr. Chair, that you've mentioned before. And finally, I'd like to acknowledge and thank you for the LGA acceleration language contained in Article 10, Sections 1 and 26. That will also undo an early 1980s shift enacted to help balance the state budget. And then one last item, in Article 6, Sections 1 through 11, there are some very technical changes to the TIF statutes, but these represent many months of work that was coordinated by the Office of the State Auditor, and we really appreciate the involvement of the OSA, the counties and city and school district representatives. We'd urge you to support that provision as well. Mr. Chair, with that, I will stay on for any questions.
Mr. Carlson, thank you so much. Next, we have Patricia Nauman and then Matt Norris on deck. Ms. Nauman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to comment today. My name is Patricia Nauman, and I am the Executive Director of Metro Cities, representing the shared interests of cities across the 7-county metropolitan region. I want to thank you for the opportunity to comment on the omnibus tax bill, House File 3669, and Metro Cities does support several provisions of the in the bill that are of significance to metropolitan cities. First, the local government aid formula factor updates in Article 5 that Mr. Carlson was just discussing. Those formula changes certainly do recognize that city needs do change over time and that program factors need to be periodically reviewed and adjusted to ensure that they remain statistically valid in predicting city needs and spending. Metro Cities also does support the increase in the appropriation that is included along with the formula changes and would encourage the continue to encourage the committee to consider a little higher increase of $90 million that we supported along with the formula changes originally. I do want to thank you, Chair Marquardt, as well as Chair Joachim and Representative Hertas for your work with the city associations on the aid formula changes. Also to Jared Swanson and House Research for his analysis and with us, persisting with us along the way, and to Polly Sukvenik and Eric Peterson for their always timely and professional assistance as these changes were discussed over several months that Mr. Carlson also referenced. Metro City's policies also do support direct property tax relief programs, and we support the changes in Articles 8 and 10 that do expand these supports for property taxpayers in Minnesota. Metro Cities does support the language to streamline the process for local governments and other entities in receiving the construction materials sales tax exemption in Article 3, and would also urge the committee to make this change permanent as the tax bill advances. This is a longstanding issue and one that we hope can be corrected permanently. Metro Cities does also strongly support the new local housing aid in Article 5. Certainly needs for affordable and workforce housing are at critical levels, has been discussed in many committees in the legislature this year. Addressing these needs does require strong state support, and Metro Cities policies do support having those state supports. We also appreciate the language that allows cities to transfer the housing aid into a local housing trust fund, which does provide an important degree of flexibility for cities in utilizing the funds. Metro Cities does support the tax increment financing provisions included in Article 6 and would like to thank the Office of the Legislative Auditor, the State Auditor, for the many meetings with stakeholders to address the need for clarifying language in some of the TIF statutes. Metro Cities does not take positions on individual TIF bills, but certainly overall appreciates the consideration to the need for flexibility and local exceptions to TIF statutes to manage various local circumstances in TIF districts. And finally, Mr. Chair and members, Metro Cities does support the sunset extension for the historic tax credit contained in Article 2. I would be happy to stand for any questions and just thank you for your time today, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Nauman, thank you so much for your testimony. Next is Matt Norris, and then Katie Schultz is on deck. Mr. Norris, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. My name is Matt Norris, and I'm the Policy Director and Director of Minnesota After School Advance at Youth Prize. I'm testifying today to thank you for including critical updates to the K-12 education tax credit in your omnibus bill. Specifically, the bill would increase the income limit for the maximum credit, which hasn't changed in 25 years, from $33,500 to $70,000. It would also index the income limit to inflation moving forward so we don't end up with a quarter century old income limit again. And finally, it would switch from using the complicated household income definition to calculate eligibility to using federal adjusted gross income instead. All three provisions are critically important for helping low-income students get the academic support like tutoring that they need. We call this tax credit educational first aid because of its ability to provide immediate academic support tailored to each student's specific needs. A recent report described the emerging K-shaped recovery for students following distance learning. Students from more affluent families who can afford additional academic support are on track to recover the lost learning from COVID by the end of this academic year. Meanwhile, lower-income students who cannot afford these supports risk falling further behind. A tutoring provider in Mankato reached out to me about one of these students just this week. It's a family making $40,000 who wants to get math tutoring services for their fifth grader. The family can't afford it on their own, so the provider was hoping the family could use this tax credit. However, under the outdated income limit, the family didn't even fall within the phase-out range. The tutoring provider asked me if there was any way that I could make an exception. Heartbroken, I had to explain that the limit is set by state law, and only the legislature has the power to change it. So I'm coming before you today to thank you on behalf of that fifth grader in Mankato and every other student across the state who needs the educational first aid this tax credit provides. There's bipartisan support for this provision in both the House and the Senate, so I hope you'll advocate strongly for it in your negotiations with the Senate and get this educational first aid to Minnesota students who need it more than ever right now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Norris. Next up, we have Katie Schultz, and then Matt Hilgert is on deck. So, Katie Schultz, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to join you and testify in support of several provisions in the Omnibus Tax Bill, House File 3669. My name is Katie Schultz, and I am a staff member at Prepare and Prosper, which is Minnesota's largest volunteer income tax assistance program. I have worked at the organization through 10 tax seasons now, and over that period of time, I've had the honor of working with thousands of low to moderate income taxpayers and hundreds of volunteers each year. And it's core to Prepare and Prosper's mission to assist Minnesota taxpayers with filing accurate tax returns and claiming all the tax benefits and credits that they're eligible for. And I appreciate the simplification of and the expansion to many credits that are included in this bill. The proposed changes to streamline claiming the renter's credit would be exceptionally beneficial to the taxpayers that Prepare and Prosper supports. I'm extremely supportive of the change in definition to household income to more closely align with tax filers' adjusted gross income. I think the consistency of using AGI will decrease confusion about how the bill is calculated, increase the accuracy of tax return preparation, and minimize the amount of follow-up that's required by the Department of Revenue on these renter's credits. Adding the return to the income tax return will deliver renters credits to filers earlier in the year and give them a more predictable timeline than the current summer distribution of the refund. And shifting that renters credit over to the income tax return also removes an important administrative barrier that filers face when preparing their own tax return that includes the renters credit. There are a lot of tax software vendors that require renters to print off and mail their form M1PR for the renter's credit. And this extra step can cause taxpayers to miss out on the credit entirely because they didn't know that the form needed to be mailed, or can cause taxpayers without easy access to printing to opt out of claiming this optional credit. There are a couple other items that I'd like to acknowledge as steps toward equity and making a tax system that works for all Minnesotans. Thank you so much for proposing an increase to the number of families that are eligible for the working family credit and adjusting the definition of who qualifies to claim the homestead classification. And I also appreciate the move to support Minnesota students at all ages by updating the K-12 education credit that Matt was just speaking to and making the student loan credit refundable. Thank you again to the committee and for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Schultz. Next up, Matt Hilgert and Bradley Peterson's on deck. Mr. Hilgert, welcome to the committee.
And good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Matt Hilgert. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. AMC represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. I'd like to thank members, staff, and nonpartisan research for their hard work on these bills. I know it is a lot of work, and I'm sure your weekends have been pretty busy the last few weeks. I did submit a letter outlining in detail several of our positions on this bill, but I will touch on a few of our priorities. As we testified multiple times in committee this year, we have several assessors who are extremely concerned about double-digit market value increases for residential properties. I'm sure Commissioner Doty is starting to see this himself as some of the PRISM submissions are coming in from across the state. As such, we do appreciate the strong emphasis on property tax relief in this bill. That is extremely important, and we look forward to continuing to emphasize that point throughout conference committee. To that, we would also try to give CPA a little bit more attention, which is we appreciate the initial investment in this mechanism. It's important not only for property tax relief, but also for mandate relief. And we're hopeful that as we go forth in conference committee, we can try to find and identify a little bit bigger target. We want to thank you for the PILT language and funding that you have put in this bill to address regional disparities and to keep this program reliable as a tool for assisting communities with a disproportionate share of state-owned lands. Mr. Chair, thank you for your mechanism on SCORE and rededicating a smaller percentage back from the general revenue fund to solid waste management and recycling activities. And lastly, I will echo what Commissioners Matos Castillo and Green have said, which is that we do appreciate the vote of confidence that this committee has given us in terms of providing yet another batch of business and rental assistance, and that we really want to thank Representative Agbaje and Howard for reaching out to us ahead of time and for their commitment to work with us on these proposals. As written, we do have some concerns. We want to make sure that if passed, that we can meet your expectations, as we have done for other relief programs since COVID has started. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will end my testimony and be here for any questions. Thank you again.
Mr. Hilger, thank you so much for your testimony. Next up is Bradley Peterson, and Ben Boxland is on deck. So, Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Bradley Peterson with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Want to touch on a couple of the items related to local government aid, because it's always a great day to talk about local government aid. So first off, thank you for your inclusion of the LGA formula updates in the omnibus tax bill. I want to thank Representative Joachim and the division, nonpartisan staff, as well as the other city groups for their collaboration on doing this work. I think we should all be very proud of what we've done through the formula updates, and CGMC is fully supportive of them. We appreciate as well the increase in the appropriation, but we continue to believe that LGA is underfunded. And we think that this is especially true in comparison to the Homestead Credit Property Tax Refund Program. Just since 2013 tax bill, when both LGA and the PTR program were last given significant changes, the PTR program has grown 105% because it is on autopilot, because its factors are indexed to inflation. Compare this to 42% for the state general fund and 32% for local government aid. And so as you are looking at balance between these programs, we continue to believe that LGA is significantly underfunded compared to the property tax refund program. As the whole discussion continues, like our other colleagues, we do hope to find more money for the LGA program appropriation closer to the $90 million that was contemplated in Representative Liz Lagarde's bill and the original proposal from the city groups. With that, Mr. Chair, very much appreciate the time. Thank you to the committee, and that's all I've got.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Next up is Ben Waxland, and Eric Bernstein is on deck. Mr. Waxland, welcome to the committee.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ben Waxland. I'm the Executive Vice President for Hospitality Minnesota, representing Minnesota's food service, hotel and lodging, and resort and campground industries. I want to start out, first of all, by thanking you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for including the federal conformity language on the Restaurant Revitalization Fund. That's a top priority for us this session, as well as the other federal relief programs. I want to thank the Department of Revenue for working on that with us, as well as the at his bill. I want to thank Representative Baker and the other bipartisan authors for moving this forward as well. Restaurants have been one of the hardest hit industries, obviously, through the pandemic. And I'm not going to belabor all the statistics that I've previously shared with this committee, but I did put our economic snapshot in the chat if you haven't had a look at it yet. The two high points I will hit, however, are that about half of restaurants are still facing insolvency here in the next 6 to 12 months, and over half do not expect to have normal revenue until 2023 or later. So we are not out of the woods as an industry, and that's why we feel it's very important not to put additional tax burden on those that did get the Restaurant Revitalization Fund grants from the federal government. Just a side note to the committee, because I know all of you care about this, we continue to fight for fully funding and replenishing the RRF at the federal level, and are hopeful that there will be some votes on that in the coming days. Number two, want to thank the committee and you, Mr. Chair, for your work on the tax exemption for capital equipment for food service operators. This is something we've worked on for a number of years. This is a fairness issue. No other manufacturer is taxed on their equipment purchases in this manner. And so we're very happy to see that included in the bill. Want to thank you, Mr. Chair. Want to thank Representative Baker for working on this and being the lead author in the bill, as well as Representative Davids for his work on it over the years. Many restaurants over the last couple of years have taken on significant debt. Our survey with the Federal Reserve indicates that about two-thirds have, and the average debt is around $500,000. So, you know, many of them have had to put purchases for equipment on the back burner. And so knowing they're going to have to do that here just to stay in business and keep their business moving forward, being able to have those purchases be exempt from the sales tax, we view as smart policy long term, but also as a benefit to them in the short term in this economic recovery over the next year and a half, 2 years here. So again, thank you for the inclusion of that provision. We do want to express concern about two provisions in the bill related to the lodging tax. Minnesota's lodging tax, the longstanding policy of the state is that local units of government can put a lodging tax in place for 3%, but that 95% of those proceeds are supposed to go to the promotion of tourism and travel, basically putting heads in beds, as folks in the lodging industry like to say. The provisions in the bill to redirect those funds for capital projects in both Woodbury and then also in Plymouth to extend and eliminate the sunset on that lodging tax expansion for capital projects is of great concern to the hotel community, both in those two cities, but also more broadly as a precedent. We've seen in recent news reports that dozens of hotels in the suburbs and exurbs, including at Woodbury here in Minnesota, are currently on a watch list for potential failure. We know that over half of hotels indicate that they will not get back to normal revenue until 2023 at the soonest. So we have concerns about those provisions. The capital projects in those cities, I'm sure, are wonderful projects. We think that there are better ways to fund them and more fair ways to fund them than to place another tax, to put this tax on hotels and demand that they pay for those projects. So we just want to put those concerns on the record, and happy to talk to you, Mr. Chair, or the authors further offline after this to flesh that out further. But thank you again for the time and ability to testify on this bill and all of your work here. We know that there are so many challenges facing the state right now. You all have a tough job, so appreciate you. Thanks for the work, and let us know how else we can be helpful going forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Waxland. Next is Eric Bernstein, and Ann Madden is on deck. Mr. Bernstein.
Chair Marquardt and members of the committee, my name is Eric Bernstein, and I am policy director at We Make Minnesota, which is a coalition of labor and community groups united in support of a more equitable budget. Thank you for having me here today to share our perspective on House File 3669, the Omnibus Tax Bill. Our coalition appreciates the majority of the major change provisions contained in this bill. In particular, we're pleased to see a substantial expansion of the dependent care credit and the student loan credit, as well as the creation of local aids for renters assistance and affordable housing. Together, these programs represent important investments in the stability and welfare of lower-income Minnesotans struggling to get a foothold in an unequal economy. Additionally, the conversion of the renter's property tax refund to an income credit is a major step towards more fair and progressive property tax system overall. By helping more renters take up their refund, this policy will ease housing cost burdens and greatly increase tax parity between owners and renters. And while we do not support some revenue reductions, such as the increased Social Security exemption, we appreciate that HF 3669 mostly protects revenues that Minnesota needs for schools, infrastructure, childcare, and other essential public services that are drastically and perennially underfunded. As a reminder, when measured as a share of the economy, Minnesota is currently spending about 15% less on all public goods and services than it did during the 1990s. And while it is often said that Minnesota is a high tax state, the reality is that our relatively higher taxes are balanced out by lower charges and fees in other areas. Minnesota ranks number 8 in total state and local tax revenue, but 19th in total own source revenue. Simply put, Minnesota is not a particularly high spending state. Schools are receiving less per pupil funding than they did in prior decades, and other foundational systems from healthcare to higher ed have not received the support they need to keep up with an aging population and a changing economy. Chair Marquardt began this session by emphasizing the threats posed by a shrinking workforce and growing senior population. HF 3669 takes some important steps towards improving our long-term outlook by addressing the economic well-being of young people and families in Minnesota. But the bulk of that work must be done by supporting the schools, parks, universities, and many other public amenities that have made Minnesota a quality of life standout in the region and in the country. We want to thank the committee for its commitment to funding these basic social building blocks and for rejecting the failed ideology that has pushed other states to enact large, top-heavy tax cuts that will wreak havoc on public services, public well-being, and long-term economic prosperity. Those are the bulk of my remarks, but on a personal note, I think this is probably the last time I'll testify in committee with Chair Marquardt running the show. So Chair Marquardt, I just want to thank you for your leadership during the last two sessions in which I've frequented these hearings. Please don't hold him, hold it against him. But I really can't imagine a tax chair handling very divided perspectives with any more grace and geniality. And it's obvious that you're universally respected. And I hope that the legislature recognizes your wisdom by granting you the final parting gift of passing the important and well-reasoned investments contained in this bill. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bernstein, for those comments. Really appreciate that. Thank you. Next is Nan Madden, and then Isaac Meyer is on deck. Ms. Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today on House File 3669, the Omnibus Tax Bill. The resources available in the 2022 legislative session represent a historic opportunity to build towards a future in which all Minnesotans can thrive. This Omnibus Tax Bill includes important targeted tax policy provisions to address the challenges everyday Minnesotans are facing and take aim at income and racial disparities. Perhaps the most exciting component of this bill is the high impact changes to the property tax refund for renters, commonly called the renter's credit. The bill simplifies the income definition and the process for applying. As a result, an estimated 120,000 Minnesota households would start receiving the renter's credit. These are folks who already qualify but are not claiming it. An additional 36,000 renter households would qualify for the credit. Many renter households would receive a larger credit than under current rules, and renters would get their tax credits much sooner after they file their income taxes. All of this while maintaining the sliding fee structure of the renter's credit that prioritizes those with the lowest incomes and folks whose property taxes are particularly high in relation to their incomes. We've heard from Minnesotans how they use their renter's credits so they can balance the challenges of paying the rent and paying for other basic expenses, whether that be car repairs to get to work, back to school supplies, or just basic toiletries and groceries. This bill's changes to the renter's credit, as well as the property tax refund for homeowners, will provide an even more powerful economic boost to struggling workers, seniors, people with disabilities, and families all across the state and to their local economies. And you have a letter in your packet with a list of the range of partners supporting property tax refunds for homeowners and renters. I also want to thank you for including other tax policies so that low and moderate income Minnesotans can better afford the costs of raising a family, starting a career, and maintaining a home, including the long overdue updates and simplification of the K-12 education credit, addressing arbitrary restrictions that are keeping some homeowners from gaining homestead status and some workers and families from accessing the working family credit, expanding tax credits for childcare expenses, which we see as an important companion, but not a replacement for increased funding for childcare assistance and early education programs, expanding the student loan credit and reaching more lower income folks, as well as several federal conformity items on similar topics. This bill would make a meaningful impact in Minnesotans' lives through tax policy, and it takes a fiscally responsible approach that allows for sustainable investments in a stronger, more equitable future in other parts of the budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madden. Next up is Isaac Meyer, and then on deck, Matt Mosman.
Chair Marquardt, members of the committee.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Isaac Meyer. I am the Housing Development Director for Itasca Community Action, which serves Itasca and Coochin Counties in northeastern Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I am here to say a sincere thank you to all of you on this committee, and especially Representative Marquardt and Representative Joachim for your inclusion of provisions to extend the state historic rehabilitation tax credit in the omnibus tax bill. As you know, the credit has generated over $5 billion in activity for our economy since 2011 and has generated thousands of good-paying jobs across the state. The credit has yielded more than a $9 return for every dollar of investment, and for greater Minnesota projects, the credit has yielded more than a $16 return for every $1 of investment, becoming a critical source of capital for community and business development and much-needed market rate and affordable housing across the state. Thank you for proposing the extension of the historic rehabilitation tax credit until 2030. 8 more years will allow cities and towns across Minnesota to save dozens more historic buildings, create thousands more jobs, and invest in our community's future. In addition to stimulating economic activity, historic preservation benefits people by providing a sense of place and continuity, efficiently using resources, preserving craftsmanship, improving aging neighborhoods and assets, and encouraging creative new uses of existing spaces. For me, the inclusion of the historic tax credit in this bill means creating more opportunities across our state, housing more people, and ultimately creating a better and more sustainable future for us all. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Meyer, thank you so much for that testimony. Next up is Matt Mosman, and on deck, Natlatha Subal. Mr. Mosman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Matt Mosman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Inter-County Association, and we represent 15 of Minnesota's larger and faster-growing counties. Micah submitted more detailed written testimony on 3669, and so I'll simply emphasize a few key priorities here, and just a bit of framing for that. You know, property taxes is the second largest revenue source for Minnesota state and local governments. And for counties, the property tax now accounts for about 45% of all county revenues. That's up from about 36% 20 years ago. And during that time, local aides have not kept pace with inflation. And so we really appreciate that House File 3669 recognizes and strengthens many of the key aid and credit mechanisms that have long been critical to funding joint local efforts, state-local efforts for local programs and to help moderate local property taxes. MICA appreciates in particular and supports 3669 provisions that would make the general fund refund, the general law refund available for all state sales taxes paid on the purchase of construction materials by local governments. Thank you very much, Chair Marquardt and committee members, for including that provision for 18 months. A general law change is really good tax policy. It treats all projects fairly and keeps local resources focused on the needed infrastructure improvements across the state. And so, like others have said, we do hope that there's an opportunity to make that permanent going forward. We also really want to call out and thank Chair Marquardt and Joachim for recognizing that county program aid warrants an increase, and we would, of course, support a larger increase if the opportunity arises that's commensurate with LGA and past inflation. We also support the increased payment in lieu of tax payments. These proposed per acre payment levels for natural resource lands and the future indexing is needed to ensure that PILT addresses a key statutory goal for that program, which is to fund areas of the state where disproportionate shares of tax-exempt natural resource lands are part of the property values that are excluded. We also support the expanded eligibility for the Senior Deferral Property Tax Program and the redirecting of a portion of the solid waste management tax that now goes into the general fund instead to SCORE grants to help refund the reuse and recycling efforts that it was really originally intended to do when that tax came along. Finally, we support the new local affordable housing aid program. That's in Article 5, Section 16. Increased investment in affordable and workforce housing is a critical need in communities across the state. This proposed new aid program provides predictable, flexible, and needed funding to allow county government and local partners to tailor housing solutions to the needs of individual communities.
Ms. Bosman, time is up.
Yep. Finally, just say the tax system is complex, and we will appreciate opportunities to keep it simplified and avoid leveraging tax base for state policy objectives through tax shifts in the future. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for your service and leadership of the committee, and I stand for any questions. I appreciate the time.
Thank you very much. Next is Natalitha Sumo, and on deck, Bob Saylor.
Good afternoon, Chair Marquardt and members of the
committee. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Natalitha Sumo, and I'm the Outreach Coordinator at the Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. In my role, I work with community partners to help families access tax credits and other public work support programs through our Bridge to Benefits tool. Hence, we're here today to express our support for the targeted approach taken in House File 3669 and the balanced revenue expenditure approach put forward by the Minnesota House. There are several provisions that we would like to highlight. With the federal child tax credit ending and needs continuing, we appreciate the $325 per child tax rebate, and we hope we can continue conversations about how to adapt lessons from the federal child tax credits in our state's tax credit system. Along those lines, we appreciate the inclusion of a simplified filing system for those without tax liability, an important element in the CTC. Expansion of the state's child and dependent care tax credit, along with investments in child care assistance and other measures, will help ease the child care challenges that are keeping too many Minnesotan families from the workforce. We appreciate the expanded access to the state's working family credit, an important tool in our efforts to reduce child poverty and its significant negative lifetime effects. Finally, under the approach in House File 3669, thousands of cost burden rental households with children will have one less application process to navigate and a few more hours to spend with their children. Emergency federal resources help children and families that needed our support way before the pandemic and showed us what is possible. As these supports disappear, the needs have not. With a significant budget surplus, Minnesota has a moral and physical imperative to adopt a budget that matches our professed values and ensure every Minnesota child has the opportunity to succeed and contribute their many gifts to our state. We believe the House approach meets that moral and physical test. Thank you so much for your time today, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Ms. Samu, thank you so much for your testimony. Appreciate that. Next up is Bob Saylor, and then Brad Lundell is on deck. Bob Saylor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, and good afternoon, and thank you for allowing me to share my story. My name is Bob Zoller, and I'm a teacher at St. Michael Albertville High School, as well as a homeowner in the community. I would like to thank Chair Marquardt and the committee for including equalization aid in this tax bill. St. Michael and Albertville are in eastern Wright County. I often describe St. Michael Albertville as a gilded district. We experienced rapid growth starting in the late 1990s, forcing us to build several schools. And so people who see our new buildings are often very impressed. Yet if you scratch beneath the shiny buildings, you'll find elementary classrooms with 34 kids, and high school classrooms with as many as 38. I was told that next year 36 is going to be pretty much the average. Each of our counselors have caseloads that are over 100 students higher than the caseloads of their counterparts at Rogers High School, just 6 miles away. Budget cuts the last 2 years have strained our staff and trimmed our course offerings to the bare bones. Yes, our kids shine in the arts and athletics and score well on standardized tests. But compared to districts just a few miles away, our kids don't have access to offerings like International Baccalaureate, a full array of AP courses, or gifted and talented programs to help kids reach their full potential. We recently reached a tentative agreement on the contract for our teachers, but the proposed settlement offers far less than districts around us, and we were already behind comparable districts in pay and benefits. We have been struggling to attract new teachers, and now there will be even less of an incentive to hire and retain staff when they can get $5,000 to $10,000 or more per year in another district with far fewer students to manage. The school district floated an operating levy last November, but the additional tax impact on property owners was too much for the voters, and the levy failed miserably. You see, unlike many school districts of similar size, we have few commercial properties with which to share the tax burden. Including equalization aid in this tax bill would allow us to try again to pass a levy, but hopefully this time the pill will be easier to swallow. Help us help ourselves by passing this bill with equalization aid included to help our kids reach their full potential. Thank you very much, and I'll stick around for questions if there are any.
Mr. Zoller, thank you so much for your testimony today. Next is Brad Lundell, and then Libby Murphy is on deck. Mr. Lundell, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell with Schools for Equity Education. I have to apologize today. I've got a new internet provider, and I don't have a lot of bandwidth here. I don't know if my face is showing up or not, but I even wore a tie.
It is not, Mr. Lundell.
Well, you know, it's really too bad because I wore a nice tie today. But again, I really want to thank the chair, and I want to thank Property Tax Chair Yu Akeem, and also the nonpartisan staff for helping so much on putting together House File 3224, which parts of that bill are contained in your omnibus tax bill. Today, I'm talking not only on behalf of Schools for Equity and Education, but also the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, Minnesota Rural Education Association, Minnesota Association of School Business Officials, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and also the Minnesota School Board Association. We're very much support Article 4, Sections 1 and 2. Section 1 deals with the cooperative facilities and making them eligible for the long-term facilities maintenance. That's an equity issue throughout the state. And then also the increase in the local option revenue in Section 2. There were some other items in House File 3224, and the local option revenue change is a little bit kind of a variation of a theme that we had in House File 3224, but all of it's very welcome. I guess in closing, the thing that I would like to say is that a lot of times the school levies aren't dealt with in the tax committee, but I would say that this is the most appropriate committee, not only this year, but into the future, to deal with property tax issue as you do with other local units of government. If we're going to have a fair and unified property tax system or approach to the property tax, I think all levying agencies or all levying bodies need to be kind of dealt with within the same realm. And I think the tax chair or the tax committee is the appropriate place to do that. So I want to thank you very, very much for including the equalization in the bill, the cooperative facilities in the bill. Look forward to working with you throughout the rest of this session. And again, as tax chairs change, hopefully we can keep this issue before the tax committee. So thank you very much, and I apologize for the internet issues.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Libby Murphy, and then Aminia Don is on deck. Ms. Murphy.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. My name is Libby Murphy. I'm the Director of Policy at Minnesota Housing Partnership. Chair Marquardt and committee members, If we are serious about investments in health, education, our workforce, and equity, then we need action and investments that scale to the demand for housing in our communities. This bill commits strong investments, and I thank the chair and committee members for your leadership on this. Minnesota Housing Partnership strongly supports the county and local aid to develop more homes and the dedicated funding for the Workforce and Affordable Homeownership Program. Cost burden and severe cost burden, meaning households paying 50% of their income on housing, are on the rise here in Minnesota. In addition to having the nation's fifth worst racial homeownership gap, Minnesota's racial disparities in homelessness and housing cost burden are also some of the worst in the nation. Minnesota needs to build more homes, especially for our lowest income renters and first-time homebuyers. These investments will help us do that. Additionally, emergency rental assistance prevented displacement for tens of thousands of very low-income and extremely low-income Minnesotan renters. These are the households that were disproportionately experiencing cost burden and severe cost burden prior to the pandemic. Minnesota families face a crisis of rent debt, demonstrated by households behind in rent and with rental arrears. In Minnesota, an estimated 65,000 households are behind on rent. 63,000 children live in a household that is behind on rent. Among Black renters, 30% of Black renters are behind on rent. This is three times what white renters' households are experiencing, and it's higher than the national average. The rapid depletion of federal emergency rental assistance underscores the importance of emergency rental assistance to help Minnesotans in economic crisis. Since the closure of Rent Help and Then, thousands of Minnesotans have struggled to secure financial assistance to remain stably housed. HomeLine, which is a tenant hotline, reported a 50% increase in client calls in January 2022 as compared to January 2021, and this call volume has not dissipated. According to Evictions Lab, eviction filings in March are up 24% from pre-pandemic averages. Across the state, there were 311 evictions filed just last week. So while the proposed funding does not meet the need, it will have an immense impact on nearly 11,000 families who could catch up on rent. And for these families, it will prevent displacement, eviction, and homelessness. We know that emergency rental assistance keeps households stably housed, and it is imperative that we include this in the final tax omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Murphy. Next is Amina Adan.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Murphy.
Welcome to the members. Committee.
Thank you. Thank you, and members of the committee. My name is Amina Adan. I'm here to testify in favor of HF 3669, which includes the Great Start Child Care and Dependent Care Credit. This credit would provide up to $3,000 for families for each child from 0 to 4 years old and cover up to three children. It is very much needed to help lower the cost of child care for families. Minnesota families. As a parent of four kids and working in a school with a high percent of low-income families, I know the burden placed on Minnesota families of young children. I believe the burden needs to be lifted from families. And I remember when I was a young mother of only three kids, I used to work three jobs to be able to feed my kids. It is important for me to make sure they had a better start than I, as an immigrant refugee, had. We all know children are expensive, and that is a very common knowledge, but spending each minute we can with our children is just as expensive. Parents worrying about making ends meet for their children would rather spend that time investing their child's development and emotional well-being, which is very important at a young age. This credit can help families make those investments. In Minnesota, high-quality childcare can cost at least $12,000 per year for one child, and often more. For low-income families, this is a huge amount. The Great Start Tax Credit will make it possible for many more families to afford care. It will make it possible for some parents to work at all. The high cost of child care has kept many parents out of the workforce. Federal Child Credit helps when I see the taxes that were cut out of my check as a young mother working three jobs. Minnesota has the opportunity to help too. Minnesota is home to many young parents. Each one of us parents want to feel some relief or minor relief and help in raising the next generation. I thank you for supporting families and young children by including the Great Start Child Care and Dependent Care Credit to help us parents and many low-income families. Thank you for your time.
Ms. Adan, thank you so much for your testimony. Is there anyone else from the public that would like to testify on House File 3669, and then with the DE1 amendment, which is the bill? All right, I don't see any. Big thank you to all the testifiers. I appreciate all that input. And so members, tomorrow, we meet at 1 o'clock. We will then mark up the bill. And so we will move House File 3669, and then we will add the DE1 amendment. And then all other amendments, there will be an author's amendment, and then all entertain all other amendments after that. Again, as I said yesterday, if you would, there's no deadline on amendments in tax committee, but get them to us as long as we can get them posted to the public. That's basically my deadline, is so that we can get it posted to the public. So, you know, maybe noon tomorrow. Otherwise, staff could get busy in the last hour or so. So try to get those in. We will then end up ultimately voting and moving the bill to Ways and Means tomorrow. So there will be a vote, of course. And then on Friday, we will meet on Friday at 1 p.m. And I think the only bill we have right now will be the education finance bill. So with that, members, thank you for your work today. The Tax Committee is adjourned.